This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 35 for July 14th, 2011. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting on live stream from the Average Guy Studios here in Bellevue, Nebraska. And we post the podcast each week out to theaverageguy.tv. You can follow me on Twitter, just at Jay Collison. If you want to send the podcast an email, send us that at podcast@theaverageguy.tv. And you can find us on Facebook. And actually, I got some more show notes. Last week's show, we talked about getting show notes via Facebook, because I post those out to our Facebook account, and some folks joined in. So just find us on Facebook by searching The Average Guy Podcast. If you sign up for that site, you'll get automatic notifications whenever somebody updates it. All right, good evening. If you've been listening for long, you know that we've been struggling to get the video working, but we do have video. We're live video. So if you're listening to this on the recorded podcast, you will certainly want to join us next Thursday, 7 or so. It's 7:45 now at this point, but we get kicking around 7 o'clock Central Time, and it looks like we have live video working. I hope the quality is good and folks are enjoying it. Tonight, we got three guys with us. We brought Christian in from somewhere. You're hanging out around Buffalo, right? You're just out kind of on a remote site, Christian, is that right?
Yeah, I'm actually on what's called Grand Island, which is an island right off Buffalo, and it's like 5 miles away. So.
Oh, okay, so you're not too far from home. You're out on the job site, and you're joining us on a really crappy laptop, but we can still hear you. Welcome to the show, Christian.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You bet. My partner in crime and brother from another mother, that would be Andrew Morris in Melbourne. Andrew, how are you doing?
Doing well, Jim. As I said before, it's a cracking day down here, and looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, and you know, as the longer I get to know you, Andrew, the more I find that how alike we are in the things that we do and the way we do them. And last week's show, right? That was last week. We had the ladies on, or was that 2 weeks ago?
Two weeks ago. Yeah.
We had our wives on and got an opportunity to talk about family tech. And so if you go back to show 33 and give that a listen, Andrew and Michelle and Sarah and I, and we talk kind of some family tech issues, you find out in that podcast you and I are a lot alike. So I wondered why we got along so well.
The two of us got out of that really easy too, didn't we?
We did. In hindsight. I think we did. And I'm sure if we ever do that again, you know, the second show is where they really open up the cannon and start firing. So it's they'll be back. So, and then a guest, but he's hardly a guest on the Home Tech Podcast, been with us a couple times now, and has actually been helping us troubleshoot all these video, all these video opportunities. Mike Howard. Mike, thanks for joining us tonight on the podcast.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Andrew and Christian.
Mike, you've started your own podcast over the last couple weeks, right? And have learned how much fun it is to kind of start your own podcast, right?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Yeah.
and maybe a lot of work?
It has been a lot more work than I thought. You guys make it look easy.
Oh, well, you know, you don't really know how much work it is to pull one of these things together until you start doing it and you figure out you got to get a site, and then you want your site to look good, and then you know, the podcast, and how are you going to record, and where are you going to store it, and how it's going to be streamed, and you got to find guests, right? Am I talking your language?
Yeah, you are. Everything is harder and takes longer than you think, at least for me. I think I'm on my fourth or fifth theme for the website. I keep changing. I run into something that is a dead end, and I got to change it. And every one of those things just takes time, and it takes time away from what you actually want to do. But I think I finally got the theme I like. So
good.
You know,
good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's still a lot of fun. It's a topic I love to talk about.
It took us a couple times to nail down the site, and I still think we've got some work to do on it. But that can be an endless hole. I mean, at some point, you got to kind of just cut it off and say, okay, enough on the website. Let's just create content now. And Christian was helping with that, helping with the website back in the winter. And then we cut it off at one point and just said enough, right?
Yeah. Well, it's going back to the debate whether we want to keep it in a blog format or whether we kind of want to open up the site and make it crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, the blog format's easy, but it certainly we could do some additional content if we did it a little bit differently. So.
Yeah. I think that's where I'm at now is I'm sticking with this theme for a good while and now going to start creating content.
So, Mike, talk a little bit about your content. Tell us where your website is at, and then talk a little bit about the content that you're making.
You can get it. The show is a photography podcast, and it's a podcast for the beginning photographer, not, you know, the pro or anything like that. And the podcast is called JPEG to RAW, and you can get us at jpegtoraw.com or novstudios.com. And right now, you know, we got three shows. We put out three shows, and those are all available on the site. And the content I'm working on right now is concerning a question I get asked most often about photography. What do you think that is, Jim? What is my number one question I get asked?
I don't know.
What camera do you use?
Which camera should I buy?
Oh, yes. There you go.
Canon or Nikon?
As Andrew knows, I am a Nikon fan, so everything I'm going to say comes from the Nikon side. But I try to have guests on, like I had Andrew on, that comes from the Canon side, to give that side of it. But I'm working on posts right now to talk about, at various price points, what I would recommend from a Nikon shooter point of view for you to buy.
There's no camera on the Nikon out of the Nikon side of the shop that you'd buy, is there?
Well, I'm sorry, what's that?
Who'd buy a Nikon?
Wow, quite a few of us buy Nikon.
Now, here's something for you Canon lovers. Has anyone heard of that new, I don't know if it's 3D or not, but the new Canon camera that's supposed to be like a new bottom rack price where they're doing professional, they're actually shooting professional music videos with, and it's this new low...
Yeah, the Canon 5D.
Yeah, the low-cost DSLR, right?
Yep. Yeah, the 5D. It does full HD. I've got a friend who does a TV show out here on one of the smaller channels, and they shoot the entire show using a Canon 5D.
Well, before we... everybody has a different definition of low price. So what does a 5D run without a lens?
A couple of grand.
Yeah, so I think that is, you know, along with the question that I get, which camera should I buy, I also have people say, and I only want to spend maybe $500. And that, ooh, as you move from the point and shoot to the DSLR, which is the type of camera where you can remove the lenses, as you move up, that, you know, $500 is just not reasonable. So I think you got to put that in mind too. So Christian, when you say low-priced camera compared to the high-end video equipment they might have been using before, yeah, that is much, much cheaper, but still it's $2,000 or so without a lens.
Right, right. The main thing that I've been reading, though, is how, you know, the money it costs to hire a crew to launch, to, you know, record a video for you, and normally when you're recording any video, music video, TV video, you normally have a camera at least three different points of where you're shooting from, and they were talking about how this kind of consolidates that price, that point of not needing as many different perspectives because of the camera itself.
Yeah, and I think those cameras they were using before were, you know, probably $20,000 plus for those things versus the 5D. And you know, as mainstream as the show House, I don't watch that show, but you know, the show House filmed one of their season finales with the 5D, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, it's, you know, when those first came out, you know, they were much anticipated, and they shot, I mean, I've seen just some amazing video shot on those. And so it certainly, if you're going to do a lot of photography or if you're going to do some recording, it's probably worth the money to plink into something like that, don't you think?
It is, but I'll give you one caveat. A lot of these DSLRs, their video does not autofocus. So if you're used to hand-holding your little camcorder like I have, and it doing all the focusing for you, you can just walk around and take video, it's not going to be as easy. I think there may be some of them that now do autofocus, but a good number of them don't. So you're going to want to lock it down on a tripod and focus on your spot and let people walk into that spot. You know, you really got to take that into account.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot harder than it looks, right? When you get down to it, the point and shoot. I mean, I kind of think, hey, wait a minute, I got a camera, you know, in my cell phone. Yeah. You know, what's wrong with that, right? There's a 5-megapixel camera in there that shoots pretty good. So, Mike, let me ask you, for the average user, what's the difference? I mean, this looks like when I shoot pictures with it, they look pretty good. What's the difference between that and maybe a $1,000 camera as far as picture quality?
Well, let's put that cell phone camera in the same group as the point and shoots. Okay. They're all very capable cameras, and their big advantage of them is that you can easily port them around. You know, with your cell phone, you probably have it with you all the time. Versus the DSLR, which is so big and clunky, and you got all the lenses, you got to carry that around with you. But the advantage to that DSLR is that sensor size. You know, the size of that sensor that you have in that little phone is extremely small, and you've packed all those pixels in there where the pixels are bigger on a SLR. And what that gives you is going to give you better depth of field, and I'll tell you what that is in a second, and better noise quality. Take some photos with your whatever that phone was, and when it's challenging light, and you'll see that it really struggles, where a DSLR is going to be much better with that. Plus, you have all the options of adding on lenses and that kind of stuff with an SLR. Now, the depth of field, if you go outside and take a photo with your point and shoot or your phone, you'll notice that almost everything is in focus. It has what's called a depth of field, is how much is in focus, you know, when you're okay. looking out. So if you're taking a landscape shot, that's awesome. You want everything in focus that you can get. But if you're taking portrait or sports or something like that, that you're not going to want everything in focus. You want to blur that background. If you've ever seen an image of football or baseball or something like that, or a wildlife shot where the background is just completely blurred and your subject is in focus, you can't do that with a point and shoot very well. Or a phone camera, where with an SLR and the right lens, you can do that, and the quality is much better with that SLR.
Okay. Well, speaking of quality, of course the Skype. Yeah, the quality of our Skype connection is struggling a little bit, and this is. Let me, Mike. We'll come back maybe a little bit more for your on this photography subject. Christian, do you have anything you wanted to add there?
I was just going to say, then stack it up to a DSLR to the new Evo 3D that can record 3D video right from your camera.
Yeah, now I did see that Evo 3D. A guy at work got one, and it's very similar to this look, except there's a second camera right in this place right here. And then it's got an additional light right next to it. When you shoot that video, now I haven't seen him shoot it, but he did show me some pictures that he took with it, and it is eerie 3D. I mean, it first of all, it takes a second. You've got to kind of acquire it with your eyes. It's like one of those, you know, those 3D puzzles that you used to put out in front of you, and you'd kind of cross your eyes, and you know, you'd have to do all these things for it to pop out. It's kind of like that. And then once you acquire it, once you figure out how to look at it, boy, that image just pops. It's not popping out of the phone. It actually goes deep back into the phone, right? It feels like you're looking into the depths of the phone when you're looking at that 3D picture. Really bizarre.
What's even worse?
Go ahead.
Every one of my family has Evo 3D except me.
Really?
Really. That's so how bad it is.
They just got them?
Yeah, my because they're doing a trade-in program with Sprint now.
Right.
If you had the regular Evo, you can trade in for $150, and the upgrade to the 3D is only $50. So there goes my dad.
Yeah.
We got 3D for graduation. There goes Teresa. And mom's old flip the phone, $2 upgrade phone is hitting the can. So why not get her a 3D? So I'm still stuck in the Windows Mobile era.
Well, if you could, would you just switch to the Evo 3D, Christian?
I probably. It's looking pretty delicious right now over my window. But,
okay.
Again, my Winmo still works. So.
Well, this picture that I saw, it was kind of eerie because it had a guy making this pose, you know, like he was jumping out at the camera. And the office was in the background, but it was kind of flat. And then he was standing out like this, but then he was kind of flat. His, you know, it wasn't like, it was like the old days of those little cameras that you would, you know, you would put in and it would take the picture and make it 3D only in the sense that it separated one layer from the other.
Right.
And so it was like looking at this, right? You could tell there's some depth, but the actual subjects were very, very flat. I'm not sure I'd want that on my phone.
I wonder if you can turn that on and off, the 3D, and just go to a regular camera versus 3D. I'm sure you can.
No, absolutely. And they're five megapixel cameras on there, so they're not bad.
And, you know, a camera phone and a point and shoot are definitely have their place. You know, I own both. I have both a camera phone and the point and shoot. But, you know, when I want to take real photos, I go to the DSLR.
Yeah.
You know, another thing you're going to struggle with is go out and, let's say your kids play sports like soccer or something like that. Take your iPhone or your Android phone or your point and shoot and try and take action shots. And that's where you'll really realize the power of a DSLR, because the focus speed, when you press the shutter button on a point and shoot, it doesn't instantly take that photo. With an SLR, it's going to lock focus much, much better. You're going to be able to track the kid. And when you press the shutter button, it takes it almost instantly.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing worse than on your phone when you go to take the picture and you push it.
And it blanks out.
And then it takes the picture.
Yes.
They're already gone.
That pause is extremely frustrating if you have moving subjects.
Yeah. No, you can't do sports that way.
Right.
With the camera phone, for the most part, it doesn't work. Andrew, back in the day, you did some photography, and you have a photography site of some kind, don't you?
Yeah, I've got one image on it at the moment. I was photographing water ski racing. So water ski racing's two guys on single skis or girls getting towed behind a inboard or an outboard race boat, anywhere up to about 140-150 mph. I spent 3 seasons standing on a riverbank with a digital SLR in hand, firing off shots every time a boat and skiers went past.
Wow.
So I think I took around about 12,000 images a season. And then, you know, all the associated post-processing and, you know, deleting out the rubbish images and then trying to sell them. I think I sold 3 images in 3 years, so it sort of became non-viable.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Mike, you're selling some of your pictures. Is that right?
Yeah, right now the only place I sell it is on iStock, which is a stock agency. I have a small portfolio there that sells some stock images. And it's interesting because sometimes you'll be going along a website and bam, there's a picture of my son. So somebody obviously bought that site, that photo, and they're using it. Yeah, and on one of my blog sites, I capture those pages as I come across them and put them on there, because eventually they won't use that photo and I want to capture that thing. So I put it on there. And I don't know if now you've opened that up, I can come across one of the things I had on my list.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is a site called Tineye, T-I-N-E-Y-E, Tineye.com. And, you know, if you got images on Flickr, if you have an image, like in my case, I have images on iStock, and I have no idea who bought them and how they're using them. But if I go to Tineye, I can put my photo there, and they will search the entire internet and look to see where that photo is being used.
Really?
Yeah, and they're doing some kind of photo match, so it's not, you know, precise. But that's how I found every time where my photo is being used is that way. Even there's a book on Amazon where my son is on the cover of the book.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this search free?
Yeah, search is free.
So I can just grab any – I can go to that site, grab any – choose any file. I just grab one on my desktop that I've got
and
up there. Right?
What I do is I use a plugin. I think I have a Chrome plugin and an IE plugin. And when I go to a site that has a photo, I can just right-click on it, choose search on Tineye, and then it'll pull up that page and – search for that image.
Oh, very cool. Well, it's certainly so I imagine folks who are worried about copyright of their photos can use this.
Yep, absolutely.
Wow. All right, very interesting.
The other way, you know, if you're talking about selling photos, was the way I got started was taking photos of my kids' soccer. I would take 300-400 shots a game, and a lady hired me for a few seasons to shoot with her while she had different contracts to shoot, you know, the league and to shoot tournaments and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I was shooting 30 to 40,000 images a year at the peak of that.
Wow. And so, I mean, the ones you put out on for sale, is
on
it
iStock?
Yeah, is it making you? I mean, do you make enough money to make it worth it, or is it just kind of a kind of a hobby.
Well, not to continue to plug my thing, but show number two.
Yeah.
I talked to a good friend of mine for the last 20 years that has a much bigger portfolio than I do. So, my portfolio is only 18 images. And out of the massive number they have, I'm surprised anybody ever finds any of my images. But I've made about $1,600 so far, and that's over several years. My friend, who has about 1,500 images, he makes around $1,400 a month.
Wow.
And so the way I've done some rough math, and I've only tested this with me and him, so, you know, considered a sample size, is about 75 cents a month per image is what you'll make.
So could you take a month off, go out and just shoot a ton of pictures, upload them, and does the math work that way?
You know, pretty much. There are some caveats here. And I, for me, I haven't put a photo up in 2 years, and they're still selling and doing that kind of thing. However, to get into this, you have to submit your three, I think it was when I did it. Submit your three, they review them, and they approve you or deny you to get in. Mm. And my first time in, I had submitted my three, and the one I liked the most, the one I thought was the most rock solid, they denied.
Oh, wow.
And I was taken back, and I thought maybe this isn't for me. But I tried again. I got in, and now once you get in, you still have to have every image reviewed before it can go up for sale. And they're looking at it for, is it sellable? Do you have any issues with the thing? Is it properly exposed? The right noise? If you have anybody that is noticeable anywhere in the photo, do you have a model release for them? Do you have a property release for any kind of property that would have been, if somebody's drinking a Coke?
Yeah.
Somebody's drinking a Coke. Do you have the right to sell that image with the Coke in it? So all that stuff. So, and they don't want any more birds or flowers or cats. They got enough of those.
Cats. What is it with cats?
I don't know. But, that sounds like it's very restrictive, but you'd be amazed by the creativity that people do on here. And, my friend Philip, who is selling, $1,400, $1,500 a month, he's small scale. There are some people on there that are making big money.
Wow.
So, it's something to look into if you take a lot of photos.
And that's just at iStock.com?
iStock is the one I use. There's Shutterfly. No, not Shutterfly. Maybe Shutterfly. I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, Shutterfly is one of them.
Yeah. Shutterfly and Dreamtime is another one. Those are the three major ones.
Okay. Yeah. Very interesting. All right. Well, we may come back around to that here towards the end. I did, you said pimp your stuff. I mean, I had you on the show to kind of pimp the photography stuff. So, wanted to talk a little bit about that and be able to let you talk through it.
Yeah, I think it appeals to the average guy.
Yeah. So, Christian, you say you got a bail. Things just aren't going well on your end.
Yeah, I'm just low battery life on the netbook.
Man, I'm sorry.
I'm on a tight schedule here. So.
Yeah. Well, hey, I appreciate you making the effort to get out there and get into the show. Anything you wanted to add before you take off?
Nothing crazy, except if you're on the home server trail and you're following my software, Magic Wake on LAN version 1.2 was released today, which includes new features for auto-scheduling your computers to wake up on the network. So you can set up a schedule for your computers to automatically wake up once only or a recurring time, a repeated daily schedule. So that's new and updated. And I will follow up the rest of my thoughts on a static Christian's Corner MP3 that'll get up to the site hopefully this weekend.
Nice. So I like it. I like it. Good. Well, have a good one, Christian, and go out there and make some money for yourself.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
All right, man. We'll see you.
Okay. Bye.
See you, Christian.
All right. That kid. That kid's gonna make more money than all of us put together, right?
Oh, absolutely. He's a Nick Zuckerberg.
Yeah. he really is. So,
well on his way.
Yeah, guys, one of the things I did want to talk about, if you were around earlier in the show, you saw that we struggled a little bit to get the video working. We've been messing around with Google Hangout. And, of course, last week's show, we spent a lot of time talking about Google Plus, the offering that came out. If you go to plus.google.com, if you haven't done it yet, most of the tech guys have, but the average guy probably is not out on Google Plus yet. Basically, Google Plus is that Facebook-like offering from Google, a little bit different in some of the ways it works, and not exactly like Facebook, but one of the things that we gravitated to very, very quickly was this Google Hangout. And Hangouts is group video chat in its most simplistic form. Guys, we've been testing it for at least a week. We did the entire home server show on it last night. I didn't have a lot of problems with the exception of the sync, but Andrew, as you and I have been working on this, the video quality doesn't seem to be as good on Google Hangout as it is on Skype.
Yeah, I think it's just a bit of a maturity thing. You know, they're in an early pre-mainstream release, so I think once they come mainstream release with the whole Plus offering and Hangout and whatnot, I think we're going to find that it's going to mature really, really quickly.
What do you mean by quickly?
Oh, I think the life. Well, you look at most of the Google application suites. So you look at Gmail, and there's something happening in the mainstream release every other week.
Okay.
You know, Google just seems to be one of those companies that once they get onto a concept, if there's something that's not quite working quickly, I think their release cycles are fast enough that they can come to market and come to a next cycle. Or the next part of a life cycle very, very quickly.
All right, so you've got some hope. You're holding out some hope that Hangouts are in Google Plus will get better.
Yeah, I think they will. I had some initial security concerns with the way some of the product worked, and even in the last week, the security's tightened up on Google Plus immensely. You know, things like, you know, who you can add to your circles and how they add and the sort of noise that you can get generated to you. So I think one of the things we've talked about was the amount of noise that some of the tech folks are getting into the streams. And one of the things I'd like to see is the ability to mute someone but still be able to go and look at what they have to say.
Yeah, the noise is ridiculous. If you haven't gone out yet, all the tech guys are on it. And there's a little bit of some butt-kissing going on out there the big tech guys, the Scobles of the world, the Leo Laportes, and don't get me wrong, I mean those guys are my heroes. But when they post, I watch. It's almost like a super Twitter feed. The people start responding to them, and I think Scoble said today they found a limit of 500 replies to each post. But it gets a little ridiculous. I'll admit it's kind of like, come on, guys. I mean, I get it. Now, maybe people are just testing it out or trying it out or whatever, but it seems to be a little overboard from that perspective. Mike?
I think so, too. I follow Trey Radcliffe, and he's a photographer that does HDR photography, and he did the same thing. He put out a post that said, list your name here and your website if you're a photographer. And he maxed out that first thread and nothing flat, put up another one and maxed that one out, put up a third one, and I think after he maxed that out, figured out this is not working, and he's finding another way. But yeah, I mean, it's the people who are on there now are have a lot of followers. It's going to be interesting to see how this scales up once you start getting people, more the average person coming over.
Yeah, and I have noticed some slowness in it. As there have been times I've tried to log in, I don't know if it's the network I'm on right at the moment or if it's Google themselves, but there's been some times it's been dragging. You know, one of the nice, you can see here if you take a peek at the stream, it does look a lot like Facebook in a lot of ways. So the idea of a center column stream with some information on the left and the right, pretty simple. You know, lists or what they call circles allow you to drop your own people, you know, the people that you know into lists very, very easy. And then the one thing I do like about it is you can just kind of sort I'll find our tech guys, and I can just sort on the folks that I've dropped into the tech guy circle that I've created, right?
Yeah.
So that part's pretty nice.
You know, there's a lot about it that I like. I like those circles. I like, you know, adding people in it. I can have people in multiple circles. And then I asked my wife, hey, why don't you join, you know, Google Plus? And I would consider her more the average user. And why she said, why would I? You know, Facebook is fine. That's where all my friends are. There's no, I don't want two of these things.
Right.
You know, one is I have enough trouble keeping up with Facebook. And I think when you go to 750 million people like Facebook has, you've gone well beyond the average tech person. And those people are not necessarily looking to have another Facebook.
Yeah, but what if, so Mike, what if Google differentiates themselves in the area of video chat or group chat, which Facebook doesn't do?
Facebook just announced Skype integration.
Yeah, but it's still, well, yeah, okay. So it's coming. Yeah. On Facebook.
And then I you know, some of the neat things that I like about Google Plus is the circles and the, how you can organize people. That seems like something that Facebook could probably, you know, copy somewhat.
Yeah, pretty quickly, I would imagine too.
I think though that, you know, it's gonna give a competitor, and while they won't kill Facebook, they will be a good alternative and they will be popular.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know what I think will happen is the tech guys who are sick of Facebook will migrate. It will become a very geeky, techie tool that the tech guys kind of gravitate towards. And Facebook will still continue to be a social platform for the masses. Chris Lux called me the other day and on Facebook, and we did Facebook chat. And actually, the picture quality on Facebook was just dynamite. If Facebook can get that, now it's my understanding they don't have group chat yet on Facebook. Now I don't know if it's that right or wrong. Andrew, do you know?
No, I don't know. I haven't had the opportunity to try it yet.
It works well if you've got the software installed and everything's right and you got a camera. When Lux and I got on there, point to point was crystal clear. I mean, it was almost HD quality when I was talking to him. So if you're listening to the show, you haven't tried it on Facebook yet, that, you know, the other thing is they've kind of buried it on Facebook. It's not the most intuitive thing to find. There's a little camera icon that's super tiny on the site that you got to kind of click on to invoke the, you know, to invoke the video. So with Google Plus, if you know the Hangout, well, starting a Hangout's a big button on there. You just click that and you can invite your circles to it. One of the things I like about Hangouts is it kind of invites people in. So I can start a Hangout, invite my tech friends, that's you guys and a bunch of other folks, and say, hey, I'm sitting on my porch. If you walk by down the sidewalk, I want you to come talk to me, type deal, right? That's a good analogy for that. So there's really no Facebook doesn't give that. I've always been afraid to ping somebody with video on even on Skype or on Facebook now, because you know you don't. What if you catch them? You know, they don't have the right clothes on or at all.
I think one of the best analogies that I heard, and I think it might have been on Twig a couple of weeks ago, just after this launched, was that they're trying to make it like the social experience that you would have if you were talking to your neighbor.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, if that's where you're going. I think, you know, if someone's sitting out on the porch, then it's okay to go up and have a chat to them. Whereas if they're not on the porch, then you're probably going to be a little bit more reserved.
Right. Right. No, and that was a great example, I thought. And so Hangout, you know, when I start a Hangout in my stream, it says Jim started a Hangout. And guys, I want to tell you, if I've started a Hangout, I'm expecting you to come over and say hi. I mean, that's kind of what I've. So it's a little bit – that's a little bit different of an idea or concept, especially in the area of video.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think with 750 million users on Facebook, there's definitely room for both of these players.
Yeah, I think it'll be an interesting paradigm to see where it shifts to. I think we'll find that Google Plus has got a lot of things in it that people have been saying Facebook needed.
Yeah.
So the way circles works is something that Facebook just didn't get right. And one of the things that I was reading the other day is because Facebook came out of a university development cycle, with the Zuckerberg and the Winklevosses, you know, whole concept around Harvard, than Stanford was that because it was a university cultural thing, it's more aimed at a university type culture, whereas Google Plus has just grown out of the Google family, so it's more along the lines of where they actually wanted it to be, so it's more of a planned product.
Yeah.
Well, and don't you think the failed implementation of Buzz kind of probably taught them some things about security?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
And so yeah. This is really Buzz 2.0.
Well, it's Buzz and Wave, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, in a lot of ways. Because
Wave for me was a huge fail.
Yeah. Yeah, and it had huge potential, just nobody knew what to do with it.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And I think you've got one of the interesting things about the stream is that it updates in real time, so you don't have to refresh your browser. If a thread's going to take off, it just takes off.
Yeah, exactly.
And that, I'll be honest, that's a little frustrating in some ways because it will go for a while. It goes too long, in my opinion, before it cuts off and starts rolling up, so that you don't see every single post. That gets, Facebook has a cleaner, tighter, smaller interface. Google Plus takes up, and I'll show you the screen again. They're on the live stream. I just have one post on my front page, and it's taken up by Leo Laporte. And I can't really see anything. I've got to scroll down a little bit. Now, my good buddy Brian Burgess is next out there. And I'm limiting the tech guys here, so this isn't the public stream. But you can kind of see if I go back. If I just go back to the public stream, you can throw a full-size picture in there. Of course, that takes up half the screen real estate as well. So yeah. I think there's some things that still have to be worked out. It does seem to take up quite a bit of real estate on the screen. I do like this notification option above. I mean, that's Facebook has that as well.
Well, they've added that black bar across the top too, which kind of integrates everything.
Yes. Yeah.
And I like that too.
I'll be honest, I check my Gmail a lot more now that I'm in Google Plus. I used to never check my Gmail.
And, I live out of Gmail, so for me this is a natural extension.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm checking a lot more frequently. So we had planned to do the show in a Hangout tonight. We got the Hangout done last night on the home server show, but we were having some bandwidth problems and Andrew, I'm afraid it's you.
Yeah, anything's possible. Speaking of me and bandwidth problems, I'm going to have to bail. We've got family in from out of town, so they're champing at the bit to go out and get some retail therapy.
I gotcha. I've got a few more questions for Mike, so Andrew, I'll let you drop off, and then Mike and I will stay on for a few more minutes, and we'll wrap this thing up. So, Andrew, good chatting with you. Have a good Friday afternoon.
Yep. Have a good weekend, everyone. See ya.
See ya.
Kind of a different show, Mike. I've never had a show where I've had the hosts drop off in the middle of the show.
Hey, if we want to talk about photo, I can keep going for a while.
Well,
we can continue about Facebook and Google if you wanted to.
No, I think we're good on that. If folks want some more information, plus.google.com. Andrew we'll put some stuff in the show notes. You can learn more about that if you go to google.com. Well, we'll put the link out there. It's a long URL.
One thing I wish he could have mentioned before he left, and you'll have it in your show notes, is importing your Facebook friends into Google Plus.
Oh,
I haven't done that yet either, and I see Andrew has that in the show notes, and that'll definitely be interesting to people who are looking to come into Google Plus.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I've been really choosy about my friends on Google Plus. Because I don't know if I wanted to make it another Facebook.
Well, that to me, that's the beauty of the circles, because you can put people into circles, and I guess you haven't done a lot of posting on there, but when you post, you can, I guess, post to the circle, can't you?
Yes. You post and limit it to the circle. So
now, one of the things, me personally, I don't friend anybody at work on Facebook. So, I could do something here on Google Plus, because I put them into a work group, and I make sure when I post something that, I never post anything that I would mind anybody seeing, but if I was somebody like that, I could post to where those work people didn't see it. If you were going on a job interview and you didn't want your boss to see it, but you were friends with them, you could do something like that. Although, what happens if you accidentally public that post? There's some danger there.
Yeah. And I've done that on Facebook from a time or two. I've sent a post out and then I thought, ooh, I'd really like to take that back. Now you can delete it and it's gone
at
that point. But it's like we talked last week, you weren't with us, but you know, when you're on social networks, you're assuming risk at that point.
Absolutely.
And choosing that you are going to relinquish your rights to privacy.
It's, right.
When we talk about privacy in the area of social networking, there really isn't any for the most part. It's the assumption that everything is out there for the most part.
Right, and unless you delete it like you did, it's out there, and more employers are going out there and searching social networks to find out more about you.
Mm-hmm.
So you definitely have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, and Mike, I mentioned this last week as well, but I actually get when I've had employees come in and say they've Googled me and found all these, you know, they've come in and they know more about me.
Yeah.
And you know, they've never met me before. They found out that I was the hiring manager, and so they put me into Google. And of course, I'm everywhere out there. I've made my life out online, so it's pretty easy to figure out I'm a runner, and then I do podcasting, and you know, my family information is out there, you know, in places where I've talked about the kids and such. So, it's a tough. I wonder if 25 years from now we'll look back at this time and go, man, we were so stupid.
Oh, I'm sure we will. We do that with everything now.
Yeah. So, anyways, well, hey, real quick.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you a few more questions on the camera stuff, and then we'll wrap this thing up. So back in 1985, I owned and was it called an SLR back in those days then when it was still film?
Yeah, if it had the removable lens. Yes,
yeah.
It's called an SLR.
So it was a Canon T50.
Yeah.
That and in fact, I think I still have it.
Okay.
A great little camera, right? And so that would have been, you know, 1986. That would have been 25 years ago when I got that camera. What's besides the fact that I'm taking these things digitally, right?
Right.
What else has really changed with the camera? Has much changed?
Well, you know, the metering for light and for white balance has probably improved quite a bit. You know, the camera trying to expose that image correctly and trying to get the right white balance. You know. And white balance is used to know what the color is in the scene. If you have the white balance off, you can get a blue image. Everything in it's blue because the white balance is wrong. So
okay.
The cameras gotten better with that. They've gotten stronger, faster, better motors in them for the autofocus. Heck, you might not even had autofocus back then. I don't know.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So they have that, and the lenses. Lenses are one thing that if you buy a quality lens, it can last you for a long time. So there is a chance that lens you had back there might still work, but the lenses of today are generally have motors. A lot of them have motors in them to help with the focusing speed, and the quality is probably better today.
Okay, and this camera ran on two AA's. Is that still pretty standard for a camera, or do they have different batteries now? That
most SLRs, most SLRs today have different batteries.
Okay,
My main cameras are Nikon D2H and Nikon D2X, and they both use the same, you know, Nikon branded battery. So
that's kind of one of those molded. It's like a molded battery that's proprietary. It just slides in there, locks in.
Right, and you got to use their proprietary charger.
They lock in on that, don't they?
They do.
They get you everywhere they can, don't they?
Absolutely, yes. And you know, over the long run, the body, the camera body, will end up being your cheapest part of the equation. You know, the lenses are what's going to cost a lot of money. You know, we talked earlier in the show about entry-level SLRs and how expensive those are. You know, I think the bottom line Nikon is maybe $650 in cost for just the camera, maybe a lens. You can easily, on a 70 to 200 lens, which is not really long on the zooming in. It's not that long, a 200 millimeter lens, but a 70 to 200 millimeter lens, f/2.8, and that 2.8 is how much light it lets in, will run you $2,000, $2,500 just for that one lens.
Wow. Yeah.
You can definitely spend some money in those lenses, but they will last you a long time if you take good care of them.
Yeah. It's an expensive hobby.
It is definitely an expensive hobby. And, you know, I always tell people when you get a camera, the one lens I tell you to get, you know, you'll probably get a kit lens, but in addition to those kit lenses, the one lens I would suggest you get is the 50 millimeter f/1.8. And it, you know, both Canon and Nikon have that same lens. It is about $100, and it's the one exception to the rule that you got to spend a lot of money to get a good lens. So okay. for $50, you'll get a really good lens.
It's a good basic standard lens for you to have for a lot of different shoots, right?
It is, and it's not a zoom lens. You will have to physically move back and forwards. But for $100, you just can't go wrong with that. Outside of that, I would say, you know, think about where you want to go with it and consider your purchases. If you skimp on some of those purchases on the front end, later on when you want to buy more, you're going to find that you just wasted money on those cheap things. And you know, like for me, when I bought my first tripod, I didn't want to spend $1,000 on a tripod and the ball head it got on top. So I spent $300. And then you live with that for a little while and realize, crap, this is not getting it. I do need to spend $1,000. So now that $1,000 tripod and ball head ended up costing me $1,300,
right?
Because I bought the thing in between. So you got to think through that stuff and what you want to spend and what you want to do.
Is it an equation where you always buy somewhere in the – if you're the average guy, you buy somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, that, somewhat. Yeah.
So if the most expensive ones are – within reason, right? The gold-plated one. I'm not talking about the gold-plated ones.
Right.
If the most expensive ones are $2,000 and the cheap ones are $500, about $1,200 is about what you're going to spend to get the right one for you.
Yeah, and with everything with photography, basically, there's a trade-off. You can spend more money, get more quality glass, but do you, you know, where's that sweet point and the amount of money versus the additional quality you're going to get. So, right, you know, look at that. You can get a Sigma, which is an off-brand for both the Canon and the Nikon, 70-2.8. That would be cheaper than the Nikon or Canon camera. Not quite as good, but probably worth the price difference.
Okay. Vinyl Freaks asking in chat if you use any non-Nikon lenses.
And I would tell you, when I started off, I had a Sigma 70-200 and a Sigma 100-300. And I don't use either one of those anymore. The Nikon 70-200 was just a better lens. Although when I was using the Sigma, I thought it was a great lens. I also use a Tokina 12-24, which is an excellent wide-angle lens, and I think it's a Tamron 90mm macro lens. With the Canon and Nikon, almost every lens they make is excellent. With the off-brands, Tokina, Tamron, Sigma—you got to pay attention to them and do some research on them. That, you know, every one of those is not good. The ones I mentioned, that Tokina 12-24 is an excellent lens. It's probably one of the best ones they made. And then a Tamron 90mm macro lens is a very good one from Tamron.
Okay, well, that's. Let me ask you this question, Mike. It seems like. And maybe it's just me, but you've been around photography for a long time. But it seems like in the last couple of years, photography has made a comeback from a popularity standpoint. Is that just me, or are more people getting into it?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, SLR sales, camera sales in general, are up year over year. They're, you know, 15% or so up year over year in total. And the SLR market is growing faster than that. You know, they're growing almost at 30% a year. In the SLRs. And they're still only making up, you know, 10-12% of the overall camera market. So, you know, still you got a lot more point and shoots being sold. But yeah, more and more people buying SLRs.
Yeah. And I'm seeing a lot more that's not what they call it. What's the image that they call these? So people go online and they get these background images that they save as their desktops, right? And it's the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge. And the colors in it are fabulous. And you think, man, that photographer was a magical moment. How did they, you know, is that called HDR?
HDR, high dynamic range.
All right.
You know, wherever you're sitting now, like in my office right here, it's fairly dark. I got a light, and my eyes have no trouble seeing the dark and the light. But your camera cannot do that. It cannot record those extremes, that light and that dark, in one image. So what you have to do is shoot a series of images exposed at different exposure settings, and then blend them together later on in software. And typically that is a three image blend or five or a seven image blend, where it's taken one image the way it thinks it should, and then several images underexposed and several images overexposed, and then you blend them later in software. And that blending can be overdone and look almost cartoonish, But if you do it right, it really, really looks good. Trey Radcliffe is probably the master of that.
Yeah, one of the sites I go to is called interfacelift.com. Have you heard of that site?
I have not. You know, Trey's site is stuck in customs, but I'd be interested. I'm going to look that up now.
Yeah, interfacelift. I'll throw that up in the on screen here. I don't even know what to call that. It's so new. I'm going to put that on the screen, I guess.
Yeah.
But Interfacelift has a lot of these, and most of them are free, but they have a lot of these pictures out there that are, you know, that have that look where you think, wow, how did they – let me select this one here. We'll blow that up a little bit.
In chat, Vinyl Freak's asking, are all HDR images RAW? Not necessarily. I mean, I think a lot of people like myself shoot in RAW, and RAW is – the data captured straight from the sensor. The camera is not modifying that file. It's giving you straight raw data, where a JPEG is baking in all your changes and compressing that file. So you're actually losing data and you're hard coding in all those changes. With HDR, you can shoot raw or JPEG. It doesn't matter. Raw just makes, if you need to do corrections later and if you want the best image possible, you know, raw is the way to go.
Yeah, so I threw up an image that's probably an HDR image, and mm-hmm. you know, you just a normal one you know, click and shoot photographer is not going to get this kind of picture off a regular camera, right?
Absolutely not, because you know, I know our people listening later can't see this, but
right.
yeah, you know, there's a built that looked like a castle or something there
right.
with lights on it, and you got part of the water there, and you would not be able to in one image expose that light so good and the dark areas of the water that good. It just wouldn't expose that well. And HDR could be very addictive. Once you do it and see the quality you can get, you just want to do more and more. To do it really good, you need to have a tripod. Set this up on a tripod and, you know, take it that way.
Yeah, because and most cameras have an HDR setting now, some of the newer ones, right? So you dictate what you want, how many and whatever, right, and hit and take pictures. Is that how it works?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call that HDR setting. It's what they call bracketing.
Okay.
And it might have been back on your camera back in the 80s. Bracketing has been around for a long time.
Oh, okay.
And what's happening there is, let's say you're doing a three-shot bracket. You tell it, I want to take a three-shot bracket with a minus one stop or a one-stop difference. So you shoot the first shot, it's normal exposure. The second shot, it's minus one exposure, and the third shot is plus one exposure. And basically, one stop is either half the light or double the light. So that's what's happening there.
Okay. All right.
So it's underexposing by cutting half the light out or overexposing by doubling the light.
Right.
And then the reason you want it on a tripod is because now you got those three images or five or seven, whatever it is. And when you blend them together, if you handheld it, you're going to have shaken that a little bit and things aren't going to line up quite right. And it just detracts from the image.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, do you think this HDR boom, because that's what I'd call it, with these pictures, do you think that's led to a kind of a resurgence in photography then? Folks more interested in going out and taking pictures?
I think that has added to it, yeah. I think, you know, things like Facebook have added to it, too.
Yeah.
The advent of camera phones have done it, too. You know, all that stuff. I think what happens is you have different type of people. People who are satisfied with their camera phone or their point and shoot, and that's enough, or people that get the bug once they use that. And like me, you know, I started off with a not very good camera, but it gave me the bug to want to shoot, and that's what drove me to where I am today. And that's, you know, kind of the story of JPEG to RAW is you start off with your phone or whatever you're starting off with shooting JPEG only, but you just want to get more out of your images, want to do more, and you move up to the better cameras and you end up shooting RAW. RAW just gives you so much more ability than JPEG.
Yeah, a little larger, right?
It's more data. More data. It does require more storage space, but the advantage is that all those settings in your camera are not hard coded into the image. It's a little, you know, sidecar file that tells the software later what you set it at, but it's not hard coded into the image. So, for instance, I might have set my flash to the wrong white balance, and I go out and I shoot, and I come back, and every image is blue. I don't know what it is about me and blue, but every image is blue. And if you shot in JPEG, you're either just out of luck or in for a lot of editing. Where if I did that in RAW, it's like, oh, okay. I just set a new white balance, copy it to all my those images, and bam, it's fixed. And on top of that, no quality loss from that change. Because this is all, you know, it's just a RAW image.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, I've talked to somebody about when you shoot black and white, you set your camera to the black and white setting and shoot there. But if you're shooting JPEG, yeah, you definitely, you're going to have to, because it's going to record that as a black and white image. If you're shooting RAW, it really doesn't matter. Because what you set it to black and white, you set it to color, it doesn't matter because it's still a RAW image. And later in software is where you change it.
Okay. Yeah, because it's going to pull that in and read that data, that metadata associated with the picture.
Absolutely.
As opposed to the metadata being absorbed into the picture, it's in a separate section, and then you can just change the metadata, which then changes the picture.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah, very cool. Yeah, well, certainly, Mike, I'm sure that photography, like anything else, can just suck enormous amounts of time.
Right?
And so you're probably not shooting a lot of pictures now. I mean, this podcasting gig is probably taking up most of your time right now, right?
It is. It's taking up a lot of my time. And, you know, as my kids transition out of sports and as I get older, you know, I'm having to find new things to shoot. But, yeah, that, you know, that and the editing on the back end. Because the one thing that shooting RAW, shooting DSLRs, to get the best quality, you do have to do some editing on the back end. And as far as editing, I don't know how much more you want to go on photography, but I'll give one more plug here.
Yeah, go ahead.
The thing that I would say, one of my top picks for an editing software and for an image catalog, you know, if you start taking thousands of images, you got to have some way to find that image again, is a program called Adobe Lightroom.
Hmm.
Yeah, you probably all heard of Adobe Photoshop.
Right.
And that's an excellent program. If you can afford to get both, get both. But Lightroom is a better image organizer, and it'll do 90% of what you want to do with a photo as far as the editing goes.
How much is it?
It is – I've seen it as cheap as $199.
Okay. That's not too bad.
Yeah.
Considering it's going to be a tool that you're going to use to, you know, edit your photos, that it's cheaper than the old days when you had to develop your own film.
And it's cheaper than Photoshop, which brand new was going to cost you, what, $600 plus?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get the educator discount, my wife's a teacher, so you know we were able to get the educator discount, you can get it as cheap as like $79.
Okay, that's not too bad.
Really good.
So for your average photographer, if they were going to get in, if they were going to get into this craze, right, they can probably get a camera, lens, some software, about $1,000. Is that pretty safe to say?
Camera, lens.
Camera, maybe a lens or two. Tripods. You said the tripods can be pretty expensive.
They can be. I was, you know, you don't have to get into that right away. Yeah, camera, lens, about $1,000.
Okay.
I think you can get in for all that. Right. And I'm working on a post to give people several ranges. The guy who wants to spend less than $1,000, the guy who wants to spend less than $1,500, and several other things on what my suggestion would be.
And if folks want to look at that post, they can go over to Nov Studios, NovStudios.com, right?
And then they can send me what they think I did wrong or what their suggestions would be at podcasts@NovStudios.
Perfect. Well, I know, Mike, you're really trying to do is create a discussion, a dialogue, a community around this photo stuff. And there's other communities out there like that, but some of them have gotten big, and maybe you're looking for some folks who want more of a personal touch and be able to get in there and interact around the idea of photography, right?
Yeah, that, and I think if you listen to show number one where I had Jenny and Kristen on, you know, a lot of these other photography podcasts really won't appeal to them because they're too far over their head. Yeah. You know, they're talking about taking trips to Africa with your $20,000 worth of equipment.
Yeah.
And I'm wanting to talk to the crowd that is the Jenny and Kristens of the world, the ones that are just getting into photography.
That's good. I mean, it's a lot like when you first started talking about this podcast, I was kind of chomping at the bits to have it part of the Average Guy Network, because really you're trying to reach the average guy, right? I mean, that's what you're saying. And one of the reasons I was interested in going almost all photography on this on the show tonight, and we did probably 80% of it photography, was because it is a home technology, right? It's something you use at home, and something not a lot of people understand. Most people have camera phones or a point and shoot now, although those are probably getting less popular with the camera phones taking more of that point and shoot away. But I'll be honest with you, on my phone, I wish it had just a you know, I have to push on the screen for it to take the picture. And I just make it
a dedicated button.
And I wanted to go chick, you know, when I take the picture, make the dang sound.
Oh, mine can make the sound. I have a sound set.
I know it can, but it's like I want to push the button and have it go click, not push the button and wait 2 seconds then have it go click.
Yeah, they need a dedicated phone button, camera button.
Yeah, and I think the Windows 7 phones have that.
I think they do too.
I think they have.
You know, unlike my Android where I've got to, you know, swipe the screen, go to the camera app, all that kind of stuff. I think the Windows 7 phones, you can get right to it without having to go through all that.
Yeah, I think you can as well.
Windows Phone 7.
Well, Mike, thanks for anything else you want to add?
Nope.
Thanks.
You know, you mentioned, you know, JPEG RAW being part of your thing. You never know what the future holds. You know, we can do more cross stuff like this.
Well, you know, we have you on about once every 7 or 8 weeks, and so you're always welcome to bring back photography. And I'm when I can, we'll listen to your podcasts. And and I was able to get to the first one. And that was crazy. Yeah, it was good. So, well, remind folks, if they want to give questions or comments, Mike gave out his email address. If you've lost that already, you can send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv, and I know how to get that to Mike, and we'll get that over to him. I'll remind folks that they can find us on Facebook. We've been doing all the show posts out there, and so if you want to interact with that, you can either go to theaverageguy.tv or search for us on Facebook at The Average Guy Network. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Jay Collison, and oftentimes I will tweet right before the show starts, or about an hour before, and then as the show gets ready to go, if you want to know when we're on. We do start just about every Thursday night, 7 o'clock Central Time. Tonight we had a false start. We got started, and then the technology fell apart, and Jim did some boneheaded stuff with technology, and it didn't work real well. We actually had to restart the show after about 10 minutes, maybe? 10? You think, Mike, 10?
Yeah, well, I think it was. Maybe more.
Oh, really? Was it that much?
Yeah.
Ouch. 10 or 15 minutes into the show, maybe 20, and we said, oh, let's ditch this, and we'll try it again. That's the way it goes with technology. Mike, thanks for joining us. Thanks to Andrew and Christian, and we'll do it all over again next week here on the Home Tech Podcast. Have a great weekend, Mike. We'll talk to you later.
Bye, guys.